We're the only one signed up.
Call the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee to order. Welcome, everyone. We have two items on our agenda today, and we will begin by opening a public hearing on Senate Bill 553.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 553 has been introduced in various forms the last couple of sessions. What it does is it redirects interest earnings that currently go into the general fund to the Oregon Rainy Day Fund. And then by that amount that is transferred into the Rainy Day Fund, it is reduced from the ending balance 1% deposit that occurs after the biennium. In other words, if the ending balance would be $100 million and there's $50 million in interest earnings, then the ending balance deposit in the reserve fund would be offset by that amount. If you look on the back of your SMS, you have a history of interest earnings, and you can see what that the amount of interest earnings that have been generated for the general fund historically going back to the 81-83. One of the things that is noticeable is for those biennia in which there's a negative on the forecast gap, which meaning that we ended up overestimating revenue, we came in below projections, interest earnings tend to be lower. And the reason for that is that the balances available to the general fund are less when we're running short on the forecast. If we have unanticipated revenue, there are more balances and therefore more interest earnings go into the general fund. And by the way, the interest earnings are a part of the calculation for surplus revenue at the end of the biennium. So you have that feedback loop that occurs.
Okay, and then go ahead.
Could I ask a question, Paul? In that interest earnings on your chart, does that include the interest that's already in statute that is earned by the rainy day fund that goes into the general fund? Is that included in that already that then would go back to the rainy day fund under the statute subsection 3?
Senator Telfer, no. The balances in the Oregon Rainy Day Fund are available to the treasurer for cash management purposes, but at the end of each month, DAS imputes the rent off those balances and attribute them to the rainy day fund. So that is not a part of this. These are earnings on general fund balances.
Okay, and I think I'll save my question for Senator Edwards, who I just walked in. So Senator Edwards, did you want to come with the treasurer? Or? Both of you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Chris Edwards. I'm state senator in North Eugene, West Eugene, and Junction City. Here to tell you a little bit about this bill. We've been working with the treasurer's office on this, and you know, as we all understand, I think the value of a rainy day fund. You know, simply saving when times are good, so that we can have reserves to turn to when times are bad. Of course, as we all know, it becomes a little bit more difficult to get agreement in the legislature over an appropriate mechanism to fund the rainy day fund with. And so there have certainly been a number of proposals. This is a very modest one. Certainly know that there's a bipartisan effort this session to do something much larger and more aggressive. But simply, this bill takes the interest earnings off the general fund and deposits them into the rainy day fund. And with the caveat that doesn't happen when it's raining. You know, when we're in those periods of time when we could be accessing the rainy day fund, then this mechanism would not be in place, would not be active. So, you know, I think in the past, maybe last session, there was a similar bill, but did not have that caveat, and so made it a little bit more difficult, perhaps to get some of the support that we would hope to have for it. So, that concludes my brief remarks, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Edwards, and thank you for bringing us this bill. This committee has dedicated this session to dealing with our lack of a robust rainy day fund, so we appreciate your contribution. Welcome, Mr. Treasurer.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name's Ted Wheeler, State Treasurer. I'm here today to support Senate Bill 553. I think the senator did a great job of laying it out. It's common sense. It is, at its core, saving in good times for bad times, and it has provisions that ensure that the legislature's hands are not tied at times when they need access to those funds. So it honors that the desire that the rainy day fund be protected insofar as if it's otherwise unlocked by statute, the funds would return to the general fund for allocation by the legislature. I support this for a couple of core reasons. Number one, it injects a degree of fiscal discipline into our saving for the rainy day fund, but it does so in a way that does not harm the ability of the legislature to allocate for important programs. In other words, there are no additional tax resources being asked for by the legislature of our taxpayers, and it doesn't take funds away from any existing programs. So it's essentially just adding fiscal discipline to the process that's already in place. While the senator correctly characterized this as a modest proposal, over the long term, it could potentially generate substantial resources for the state of Oregon's rainy day fund. In our current historically low interest rate environment, it's generating about $21 million per biennium. That is assuming a rate of return of about 1.06%, which is what the short-term fund is currently returning to investors. So I have great confidence that this fulfills our objectives in terms of creating a robust source of financing for the rainy day fund. It meets the common sense principles. It allows flexibility for the legislature in tough economic times, and I would encourage you to give it full consideration, and I appreciate your time today. Thank you very much.
Okay, and in effect, it would function as a substitute for the ending balance source of money. In other words, if the interest earnings surpass the ending fund balance, then the ending fund balance would not go into a rainy day fund. Is that correct?
Could you restate that?
Ending fund balance, or 1% of the previous general fund, is allocated to the rainy day fund. And so if the interest earnings equaled or exceeded the amount of the ending fund balance, then the interest earnings would go in and the ending fund balance wouldn't. Is that correct?
Yes. Madam Chair, Section 3 of the bill, Sub 2, refers to the 1%, an amount equal to 1% of general fund appropriations is deposited in the reserve fund, and then that is less the amount of interest deposited in the rainy day fund. So that would be a partial offset in most cases.
Okay, so in most cases, the interest earnings would not exceed the ending fund balance.
Madam Chair, that's correct, yes.
Okay. I was just trying to flip it around to what you were talking about, an offset of the ending fund balance by the interest savings, and I was flipping it around to see if it would also work in reverse. Right. Senator House.
Thank you. I very much appreciate your work on doing something with the rainy day fund. It's long been an Achilles heel in the state. I noticed that in Section 5 it specifically calls out higher education. Did you intend to do that, or is that because of the drafting of including everyone? And if so, what's the policy reason for taking interest money from what's largely tuition money and as opposed to general tax dollars?
We might want to get staff up here that's worked on some of the technical details, and committee staff may be able to answer some of these some of the questions as well.
Yeah, let's turn to Paul for that.
Senator Hess, I think that There was a bill in the last session that set up an Oregon University Fund account that was able to combine a series of accounts that the OUS had. A portion of that still goes to the general fund. So this section refers to that general fund portion that of that OUS account. Now, there's been proposals last session and this session to redirect those dollars that from the university fund that's going to the general fund now and retain those within the university system, but those have not passed. So current law, this would not affect current law. It only designates that those that would be going to the general fund under current law go to the reserve fund.
Okay, if I just would follow up, Madam Chair, that I just think that tuition money should stay with the universities, and interest money included.
And nothing in this bill would preclude that being done at some future time, correct, Paul?
Madam Chair, no. That would be a separate policy decision, but it would reduce the amount flowing into the rainy day fund because right. That's a portion of the general fund interest earnings now.
And Madam Chair, can I clarify as one of the sponsors of this bill? I agree with Senator Haas on this issue, and nothing in this bill is certainly meant to preclude that policy discussion.
Okay. Thank you.
Other questions? Senator Morris.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And again, my applause for whatever we can do to make a rainy day fund work. Lots of ideas. My question is one that deals with cash management. We have variable, just the timing on receipt of cash, and we do financing with tax anticipation notes. At least we've done that in the past. And my question would be, if you factored in the net of the interest earned and the interest paid, just keeping your obviously cash available for obligations when it isn't there, how much change would there be in the interest earnings? I'm probably not being clear. We have a financing cost when we need to borrow money and don't have it. We have an interest gain when we have actual funds on hand. And if you combine those two to the net, what impact would it have on the net interest earnings?
Paul, why don't you take a stab at that? Unless you wanted, Mr. Treasurer.
No, well, Paul, you can go ahead and then I'll follow up because I do have some comments on that.
Okay. Senator Morris, the larger the balances that we have in the general fund, the less, of course, borrowing needs are going to be an external borrowing cost. The legislature approved the treasurer issuing the tax anticipation notes for those periods where we did have cash shortages. And the result of that is actually to reduce the state's state's interest costs, because those funds that could be borrowed externally with favorable tax treatment are actually paid back at a lower rate than those that are borrowed from other funds within the state government. So that was the purpose behind the tax anticipation notes. So that wouldn't change that. The other element is around the rainy day fund itself now, and as we said earlier, those balances in the rainy day fund can be used for cash management purposes. So the larger those get, the less the state will need to borrow externally. Right now, of course, those balances are very small after that account has largely been used up in this biennium.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I think Paul answered the question very well. The answer to your question is no. The estimate that I provided to you was really the delta, the difference between the current, the similar time frame in terms of a T-bill. We use the 90-day T-bill, which is basically the same time period by which we invest the state's short-term fund. The short-term fund is more aggressive, as I think we've discussed in prior bill discussions. It's more aggressive than the 90-day T-bill. It's currently returning about five times what that T-bill rate is returning. So we do, through the use of the short-term fund, enjoy a higher rate of return, but at a higher rate of risk as well.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Senator Telfer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had the opportunity and benefit to spend a lot of time with the treasurer last year. and heard this thought a number of times. And I'm just wondering if there's a lot of talk and a lot of movement and discussion on crafting something to bring stabilization to our funds. Would you be willing to incorporate some of these thoughts into those conversations instead of just the standalone?
I can, Madam Chair, Senator Telfer, I can only speak for myself, but yes. I mean, that's the short answer. I've spent some time, my staff has spent some time talking with various legislators, certainly Legislative Revenue Office, and, you know, it's, as Senator Haas said, our reserves have been our Achilles heel, and I happen to be of the opinion that there are a lot of different ways that we could go about boosting those reserves. This is just one that I wanted to get into the mix and into the discussion. And you know, some of perhaps the more aggressive plans, you know, which I think have merit. You know, some of them may get through this political process, and some may not. And this is just one more to have in the mix. So.
And I'll just say this is going to be a team effort, and I really appreciate the willingness of both of you to be part of the team that's going to develop something that we can present to stabilize our system. And, you know, I don't think any of us can predict what the final outlines of it are going to be, so we all have to really make sure that we analyze all of the proposals before us and get something that really will accomplish what we're trying to get at.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Is there anybody else who would like to talk on this? Okay, we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 553 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 250. Senate Bill 250 was a subsequent referral to us from the Senate Education Committee, and we are blessed on this committee of having two members of that committee here, Senator Haas and Senator Morse, so I will be relying heavily on them for guidance on this. Dave.
Chair Burdick, members of the committee, Senate Bill 250A does a lot of things, but in essence, it does two things. One, immediately starting from next academic year, ESD's share of formula money declines to currently from 475 to 3.56%. And then in the following year, it becomes 2.37% of the formula money. So the difference goes to the school districts. And yes.
Okay.
Okay. And then the next thing it does is it allows a school district of an education service district to withdraw from the educational service district on or after July 1, 2014. But it also allows the withdrawal for a school district in specified education service districts. For now, it's Marion Polk, Union Baker, and Yamhill County located education service district in this bill. It allows the withdrawal of these of a school district in these education service districts on or after July 1, 2012. And it requires the education service district to distribute to school districts that withdraw the school district's prorated amount of specified funds available to the education service district. For now, in the bill, the specified funds available is state school fund and school improvement fund, and also electric audit funds. So it does basically a couple of big things in this bill.
Okay, and all the way from beautiful Baker, we have a panel, and I'm betting it's going to be...
President Gelser's head.
Oh, where is she? Oh, there she is. Yeah, Representative Gelser, yes, you are here. Come on up. My apologies.
That's okay. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Representative Sarah Gelser, not from Baker County. I'm from Benton County, a constituent of Vice Chair Morse's. I represent Corvallis and Philomath. Thank you very much for the invitation to come and talk to you today a little bit about Senate Bill 250. I believe I was invited to share some of the concerns that I had shared with the Senate Education Committee in hope that we might take this opportunity while the bill is in the Senate Finance Committee to make some further amendments to the bill, specifically around the appropriate utilization of educational service districts for the provision of special education services. The way that most of us, and I know the letters that I receive in my email box, the visits I receive in my office, when people describe the importance of ESDs, they often reference the importance of these programs to students with special needs and students with disabilities. Oftentimes, most recently, people have been referencing the early intervention and early childhood special education programs, which are woefully underfunded and incredibly important, but are not directly administered by ESDs. Those come through a different grant stream and are not part of what we are talking about today. But generally, we hear about low-incidence disabilities, about autism specialists, braille specialists, speech therapy, occupational therapy services that are provided on an itinerant basis to school districts. That is an appropriate and important resource for education service districts to be able to provide to local school districts. What is not appropriate, in my belief, and what is not a good use of resources is what has developed as a practice in many parts of the state. And it's important to note, not in my part of the state, Lynn-Benton Lincoln ESD does not do this, and I think is a model of excellence in both the delivery of ESD services generally and special education services in particular. But in many parts of the state, you have school districts essentially contracting out their special education services to educational service districts. They essentially absolve themselves of responsibility for these students and cart them over to the ESD. One of the best examples of this came when Senator Haas and I did a town hall together in Lake Oswego. Every question related to special education was put in the category of ESD reform. When I asked about that later, the moderator of the program from the school district said that special education is the responsibility of the ESD. That is not true. Special education is primarily the responsibility of the school district. Last summer, I had the opportunity to observe probably what is the most outrageous example of misuse of ESD resources for special education in Southern Oregon through the Southern Oregon ESD and the Medford School District. The Medford voters were very generous in approving the first new high school in quite some time. They built a new high school, and the week before high school started, the students in what is called the Medford STEPS program, which is a special education program, went to the school to register for school. The STEPS program is operated through the ESD, and upon arriving there, found out they were not going to be welcomed at the new high school. They were going to be left behind at the old dilapidated high school with the alternative high school. They would no longer have access to general education students. They would no longer have access to the courses needed to earn a regular, modified, or extended diploma. Nobody had remembered to inform these students about the new location of their school, even the week before school had started. The school district no longer saw them as their responsibility, and the ESD apparently forgot to let them know that this had happened. What is happening in this case is that Medford School District is contracting out these students to Southern Oregon ESD, who hires full-time teachers to teach Medford students full-time in Medford school facilities. This makes no sense. If the Southern Oregon ESD can hire these staff members to teach Medford students full-time, surely the Medford School District can hire these same staff to teach these same students the same things in the same buildings for less money, because they could avoid the administrative overrun from the Educational Service District. We have two bills in the House Education Committee that talk about limiting the ability for Educational Service Districts to provide full-time special education services classes or self-contained classrooms in this way. It actually happens all across the state. Southern Oregon ESD is a great example of it. But what it essentially does is create a secret hidden system of separate schools and separate classrooms, which segregate children from other students in their districts. We had a hearing on this issue in House Education Committee last fall. We heard from one parent whose child had attended that STEPS program, wanted her child to participate in the graduation at South Medford High School, where he had attended for 4 years. The principal said that he could not because he was not a member of the student body. This was a surprise to her because he had attended that school for 4 years. Colleagues, these students deserve the right to belong to a student body. Since having these hearings, I've started to receive emails, sometimes in my private email account, from staff members and others working within some of these programs. One that was most concerning also came from the Southern Oregon ESD, talked about the lack of availability of services for students in these classrooms, lack of access to general educators, and what was most troubling to me was the lack of articulation between the ESD schedule and the school district schedule. A full-time ESD staff running self-contained classrooms were required to come in and report to work on the same days that the schools were on furlough days or cut days. This, again, makes absolutely no sense. Colleagues, probably the bills that we have in House Ed go a little bit too far, but I would like to work with you to ensure that as we take this opportunity to look at how to have more streamlined and effective ESDs, we can move beyond a 1960s approach to special education and bring our ESDs into the 21st century, where we recognize that students with disabilities are students first, that they belong as members of their community, they should attend the same schools as their brothers and sisters, they should not be denied the opportunity to walk across the stage in their community high school, and they certainly shouldn't be hidden away in secret classes in dilapidated buildings in other parts of the town without anybody letting them know ahead of time that that's what's going to happen to them. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Questions? Senator Telford.
I have a question. Thank you. Representative Gelzer, it sounds to me like we have some major issues with ESDs and how some of them may or may not be operating. Do we really just want to pull the rug out of from them, or do we want to reorganize them and maybe revamp the way they work?
Thank you, Senator Burdick. I almost was looking for the co-chair. I'm so used to the House. Senator Telford.
Less of us up here, too.
Thank you for the question. I think we have serious work to do in our ESDs, and it's challenging for someone coming from my part of the state because the Lynn Benton Lincoln ESD is an ESD that is working very well. If you look at the way that they operate, they have brought together the superintendents of their 12 component districts. Any single one of those superintendents has the authority to veto a tier one service or a required service to be purchased through resolution dollars. So there's a great deal of flexibility, governance, and oversight from those 12 superintendents in the Lynn Benton Lincoln ESD service system. It's also important to note that within that district you have big districts like Corvallis and Albany and tiny districts like Alsea with less than 150 kids, and Lynn Benton Lincoln ESD does not offer self-contained classrooms among its menu of services available to kids. They have determined along with their component districts that students should be served in their local schools. If we could get all ESDs to work like Lynn Benton Lincoln ESD, I think that we would be in a great place in our state. Unfortunately, the majority of our ESDs are not working in a way that recognizes that they are the service provider and the school district is the customer. We need to be looking at smart ESD reforms that ensure that kids have access to the educational services that they need and that business offices and school districts have access to the infrastructure that they need, but making sure that school districts are able to drive what it is that they're receiving or purchasing from the districts. I think when you look at an issue in Eastern Oregon, like you're going to hear from the South Baker Consortium, where they have figured out how to work together to develop their own consortium and provide better services at a lower cost to their kids, and their new ESD won't let them out, that system is backwards. That ESD has forgotten that South Baker Consortium is their customer. If they don't want to buy, they should not have to.
Follow-up.
Follow-up, please.
Oh, thank you for that short answer. I guess my point would be what I'm hearing is still there's really a need to reform and reorganize the way we have them versus a school district just pulling out and coming back and in it, and it will. You know, I think there's a little bit of lack of stability there, but what you're hurting is the smaller districts when you have the larger districts pulling out of ESDs.
Madam Chair, Senator Telfer, I disagree with that assessment. If you take Salem-Keizer, for instance, many of the other districts that are in there, right now they're already opting out. If we could just take them out and make sure that we adjust the formula so they're not taking more than their fair share of money out of that ESD, it's going to relieve a lot of argument. That's a good thing to just take that off the table. South Baker ESD, you're looking at, or South Baker Consortium, you're looking at a number of very small school districts. Those kids will be served better if they are not forced into the Intermountain ESD.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There is no evidence to that, this notion that the big subsidize the smalls. And we have Brian Reeder from the department, who maybe will present on this later today, who charted this earlier this year and said statewide, that's about a wash. In some ESDs, the smalls subsidize the bigs a little bit. In some, the bigs subsidize the smalls a little bit. But statewide, it's about a wash. And it doesn't really happen. We'll hear from the Baker boys pretty soon.
All right. Thank you, Representative Gilser.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Now from beautiful Baker. I'm guessing from my sign-up sheet, there are three people who signed up as being more than 100 miles, so I'm guessing the Baker people are Walt Wegener, Mike Corley, and Doug Dalton.
Madam Chair, can I say
something? Yes, please.
Madam Chair, as they come up, just to make sure that, I guess, to set the stage, besides the rate change in this bill, for Senator Telfer's perspective, I guess, the opt-out for most schools begins in 2014, most school districts. The opt-out will begin for, under this bill, the Intermountain ESDs and the Baker people next year, and for the Salem Willamette ESD people next year, because they're effectively already doing it as a result of mismanagement issues in the past. And I think they're here to tell you that it's working.
Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. My name is Walt Wegener. I am the superintendent of Baker School District. I will speak a little bit about accountability, as will these other two gentlemen, I believe, and we are in favor of Senate Bill 250. May I begin with a simple declaration? We do not believe there will be any negative impact at this point on our ESD, its constituent districts, or the communities served by ESDs with the passage of Senate Bill 250, or by permission from the state to allow the South Consortium or any subset of state school districts to opt out. If I might opine just one moment about perceived change and the way people react to change, we've discovered a few things over the last couple of months. Change seems to challenge many people. They are afraid of the new or unexplored, and even more afraid they cannot reach the same levels of personal success and safety that they currently enjoy, even though others clearly have. It is not because they know the truth. It is because they fear that that which they do not know or have not accepted is going to be true. They act ready, fire, aim, without knowledge of what really is, only fear they generate in their own hearts. We are asking for an opt-out that allows everyone to do what they currently do, if that's what they wish, even when forced into a poorly thought-out merger with an aggressive overlord, as in our particular case. For this, we also offer clarity in the use of resources. We are audited and answer to a board in our own town. We take care of our resources, and we take care of coverage for our children. Our purpose is solely to be allowed to continue to provide better service for less money, as we currently actually do. We have a business model that works, supporting an instructional support structure that works. Those who choose a different business model and a different student support structure answer to different communities with different local expectations. To wax a little bit technical, our battle is not with the ESD system. We concur. The mission of Education Service Districts is to assist school districts and the Department of Education in achieving Oregon's educational goals by providing equitable, high-quality, cost-effective, and locally responsive educational services at a regional level. That is the current statute, 334-0051. And further, that same statute, Part 4B, to ensure that an education service district is locally responsive, an education service district shall provide a variety of flexible service delivery models. We currently are in one of those flexible delivery models and have opted out in order to provide better service for our children in our geographic location. The statute goes on to point out that that flexible service also requires 90% of general service funding, and that the resolution services that need to be provided are special ed, technology, instruction and instructional support, and administrative stuff where for necessary. Now, certainly that can be found locally in almost all cases. So let me express the battle we seem to be in somewhat colloquial terms. There are many ways, I'm sure, for an institution to provide services to a group. One, I would call the benevolent mom theory. Think about this. When you put your children into a costume and send them out on Halloween, they come back with candy, and the benevolent mom will hold the candy, and she will provide candy service at her whim. This is the ESD model we are currently at. They call together a resolution service. They force it on us. They offer us service that they think we need, when they think we need it, in the amount they think we need it, without any accountability at all to our board, to our families, to our children. The other model is the free market system. Locally in the free market system, the needs of the populace arise and niche providers form to serve those needs. This is exactly what has happened for us. Clients engage members of the local community to provide the best service and product possible within the means of the locality. Because of competition, there is a real emphasis on innovation in cost-effective and locally responsive service. And because we are local, there is a real emphasis on equity, fairness, and service. It is this free market system that we've put in place. What we wish is our fair share of the educational service funds to be allowed to continue with our free market, equitable, cost-effective, and locally controlled structure. We do not have to invent our system or define a business model to use it. Our system is a reality. It already works. I think everybody can accept the fact that in a free market, costs reduce. That's one of the basic fundamentals of the United States. As said before, statute for local service plans identified 334177 Part 2, an education service district board shall extend at least 90% of all amounts received from the state school fund and at least 90% of all amounts considered to be local revenues on an educational service district or services programs that are approved by the component districts with the educational service district through the resolution process described in statute 334175. So clearly, the statute says there shall be flexible service and that 90% of the general service money shall be spent on that. Yet our ESB, our new ESD's board's whim, our local service plan does not include any flexible service. They are unaccountable to us, and we are therefore not able to be as accountable as we have been for the use of our funds in our districts. And to define who can deliver this service, the current statute identifies ESDs, of course, but also in statute 334175 Part 7, it says schools, and in statute 334175 Part 8, it says districts shall provide the flexible service. And yet RSD board has taken the whim that they will not deliver for us the services that we have over these last 13 years and the consortium last 3 years so well to our kids and been accountable to our communities. A monopoly, I would opine, no matter as benevolent as your mother or as intractable as a bureaucratic ESD, is wasteful by nature. We have a business model that reinvests our savings into services for our children. Some of the ESD have asked us, how is it possible for you to do what you do? We've shared, we've tried to show them, we've tried to do everything we can. But instead, that is a not well-hidden accusation of our lying. We are not lying. We'd be more than glad to go anywhere and show what we do. We bring the data and we will show anyone across the state how we do what we do, and it is not conjecture of something we may do in the future. It is done our way in other states and is done well there. But it is here in Oregon that it has got out of control and trouble is afoot. A free market system always seeks service, therefore is locally responsive. And because a local control is accountable, and by accountable we mean not just money, which is important, but our accountability is about service to the children we serve. The taxes we glean from our people must go entirely to their service. Thus, our local accountability is to meet expectations of our patrons. The families and community that elect and hire us as experts in the field, accountability requires that we sustain quality, which explains why we travel all these many miles, all these many times, to speak with you, even ask that you support this bill. Accountability is to be innovative in the face of challenge and to always improve the product so we can compete better and so our children are educated to contribute. Your support of Senate Bill 250 supports the once generally executed intent of ESD law in Oregon, and I thank you for your time, and are there any questions?
Thank you. I think we'll finish the panel, and then we'll open it up for questions and hopefully get you on the road before dark.
Thank you. We appreciate that, Madam Chair, fellow committee members. For the record, my name is Doug Dalton. I am the Chief Financial Officer for Baker School District. I'm a CPA, and my background is I was a senior finance executive with a Fortune 1000 company for many years. So I come from the outside into this in the last couple years. So I have a different perspective. We are here, obviously, in full support, passionately, if you can't tell, for Senate Bill 250. And it was either school buses full of kids and parents or us, and we thought this would probably be more effective. We're here for two reasons. The one, first reason, is because this would allow us, as Senator Hass stated, to continue to receive our flow-through funds because our ESD is insolvent. It's going away, and we are being merged into another ESD that would not allow us to do this. But secondly, we're here beyond just our needs. The success that we've seen, we would like to let every district in the state be able to receive that kind of benefit. Let everybody be as passionate as we are about it. And for the committee members that have not heard our story before, over 12 years ago, we were able to start receiving flow-through funds. Since then, we have built a very successful program. We've built a network of strategic partners of both private industry service providers and other school districts within our county to form what is called the South Consortium. And we've been able to reduce our costs significantly simply by allowing people to compete for the business. And it shouldn't be understated that they were significant cost reductions. The savings, which are considerable, have been reinvested. Because we get the question, what happens to the savings? They're reinvested back into students. We're able to buy things like additional software, computers, paraeducators in the classroom, more time with specialists like speech and language people. They get to see them more. And it's not a stretch for us to say that is why our students are outperforming all the other students in the ESD and the state averages. Our students are doing really well. And it's, when you think about it, the best way to determine how Senate Bill 250 would play out is to pilot it. And pilot it long enough with enough diverse districts so you would know how will this play out financially and how will it play out for the kids. We've done that. We've piloted this bill for 12 years. We are your window into what will happen. And what I would like to do is give you some actual answers based upon our data and our facts, not our opinions, to some of the common questions which turn into misconceptions that are out there. Maybe even some of them have already come up today. Before I do that, though, I want to answer one that just came to me, and it's maybe not obvious to everybody, but why is this so important now? Why does it have such bipartisan support and momentum now versus in the past? And I can tell you that there's a few reasons. Number one, school districts don't look anything like they did 3 years ago. Your students can now choose where they go to school. When we all went to school, we went to school in our district. Not anymore. They can choose every day, and it happens. They come and go every day. That's a huge dynamic change for school districts. Secondly, our funding is severely erratic. It used to be based upon property taxes, which were predictable and level. Now we get a majority of our funding from the state, which, as we can see, is not predictable and not level. They've also had their funding cut significantly. You take these dynamics and put them together, and school districts, as we have done, and they all are right now, they are examining every phase of their organization, and it is no longer okay for a service to not be cost-effective and of the highest quality. And the pressure is only going to intensify significantly. So the questions that arise, question one, how will the funding work and is it complicated? That's the beauty of this. It is not complicated. The funding mechanism, school funding can seem complicated. Senate Bill 250, by allowing schools to opt out, is not complicated. It's reduced to an amount per student that flows from the state to the ESD and then directly to the school that elects to opt out. It's all based upon the amount of students. I have met with ODE on the issue, and it's a very straightforward issue. That's what's nice about this. We can do this without complications. Question two, will this cost the state additional money? No. In fact, our findings indicate that we can stretch our dollar further. So because our costs are less, we get more services. We can go buy more services. So this is actually one way that the state can provide additional funding to schools without spending any money. Services will go up in a time when the state doesn't have the money to fund them. Will this impact small schools negatively? No. We have varying sizes of schools in our group, and I'll give you an idea. We have districts of a few thousand. Call that a medium-sized district. We have remote districts of 200 students, charter school. We have one remote district with less than 30 students. And these are districts where you have to drive an hour and over a mountain pass to even touch the next school district. They don't get any more rural than these schools. We also now have added some online schools to our consortium. Our consortium is growing. People hear our story and they call us and they say, put us in touch with your IT provider. Put us in touch with your occupational therapist. It's growing, and I suspect it's going to grow very fast. The people in our consortium right now, the small schools, are actually saving over $150,000 a year. They're not only surviving, they're thriving, and their student test scores are thriving. Our opinion is that any size district has the ability to benefit under this. It's only a matter of how much they want to work, and it takes a little bit of innovation. In fact, there's been previous testimony from a policy analyst who looked at the policy, and it was his opinion that any school district should benefit under this bill. We agree. Next question, if large districts elect to opt out, will there be enough funding left at ESDs to serve the small remaining schools? Our findings are yes. The ESDs will have enough funding to provide the service to the remaining schools. ODE has testified to the same issue that Senator Haas referred to, call it equity, call it subsidizing, different terms. Their findings were there were very few cases where small districts were actually being subsidized by the large. To take it further, we wanted to use, because we knew the data within our own ESD, we ran a scenario. Every large district pulls out under Senate Bill 250. They elect to buy no services back from the ESD. That won't happen. That's the most extreme thing that could happen. But we wanted to know what was going to be left for the small schools. And it turns out that actually the small school districts in our ESD, if all the large districts pull out, have more dollars per student left at the end of the day when the large districts pull out. So we concur with ODE on their findings. Next question, will this bill only benefit large schools? Again, no. We've clearly proven that small schools have much to gain. Are we an anomaly in Baker County for some reason? That question comes up. No. There's no indication of any circumstances that exist that would make our situation not replicatable in other districts. And Mr. Wagner offered, and I will offer again, we will send a team anywhere, anytime to help people set this up. Because we realize that in education, there aren't always leaders in place with this experience to do this. We're willing to help. We can bridge that gap. Will there be private industry service providers to provide the services? Answers, yes. In rural Oregon, we did not have any trouble at all finding IT providers, finding hospitals to step up, consultants, so on and so forth. The list goes on. And some of these have actually, like our IT provider, has built a niche in what he does, and he could actually expand and handle all of Eastern Oregon. It's pretty amazing. I'll tell you, in bringing private industry into the education system, I'll give you a couple ideas, a couple things that have happened. The innovation and creativity that they bring that wouldn't have been brought otherwise can transform schools, and it's pretty amazing what it can do. Secondly, we can write into contracts. We talk about accountability. We can have a service provider that we write a contract with that is dependent upon how students perform. So if the student doesn't perform, the provider doesn't get the business back, doesn't get paid, whatever. It's their service has to have an end result of students doing better. You can't do that with an ESD. To answer the question that Senator Telfer raised, do we need further ESD reform or restructuring? No. We feel that having to compete, ESDs will self-correct their issues. Good ESDs are going to prosper. ESDs that aren't performing well are either going to get more cost competitive, they're going to be managed better, or they're going to lose customers. It takes care of any further reform that's needed on its own, and that's happened in other states. Is ESD funding going away, and therefore ESDs are going away? No. The ESD funding that we talk about that is being reduced slowly, that we do have to remember, and it was stated, the difference is going to go to the school districts. And so they can purchase services from the ESD, and the funding actually ends up right back at ESDs. But again, we feel that good ESDs, and there are some good ESDs out there, are going to continue to do well. They have happy customers. They may even do better. We must remember that all we're doing is giving schools the option to choose. We are giving ESDs all the customers from day one. They're their customers to lose, and we're giving them 3 years to prepare to compete for those customers. We couldn't do this any gentler way than this. We have all the data to support all of our findings. Upon request, we'd be happy at a work session or whatever to go through any of that you'd like to go through. And we'd like to thank the committee and all those involved for being willing to be a part of legislation that can have such an impact on students, especially students with disabilities. So thank you for the time.
Thank you. Mr. Corley.
Madam Chairman, Senate Revenue Committee, my name is Mike Corley. I'm from Pine Eagle School District on the far side of the state, about 15 miles from the Hell's Canyon. As you can see by the paper I handed out, we're pretty rural. The thing that it doesn't tell you on that sheet is that a lot of our roads are gravel, too. I laugh when somebody pointed out the other day that there's a bill that will reduce transportation costs so people can skateboard or ride a bicycle. Skateboarding on gravel is not the neatest thing in the world to do, but, you know, if we have to, we'll try it. Over 60% of our students in our school district are on free or reduced or live in a lower economic state. But still, students there manage to perform. An average of 87% of our students then exceed standards as assessed through the OAKS test. I want you to understand what I'm saying there, because I've been misunderstood a number of times in the time that I've been down here. What that means is, of the tests that are given, the 7 in reading, the 7 in math, the 3 in science, and the 1 in writing, 87% of those tests are passed or exceeded. In 2008-2009, Pine Eagle School District joined Baker 5GA in electing to provide its own services. This, of course, was in opposition to ESD services. The Union Baker ESD South Consortium was formed as a means to reach economies or attain economies. The problem at that time, as you look at the handout I give you and the chart I give you, was it took all the money that was allocated from the ESC revenue just to provide the resources or provide the services for special ed. There was none left over. Now, I'm not saying that Intermountain ESD will be the same. What I'm saying is that we took a look at that and said, folks, this isn't going to work for us. We need more. And so that's when we joined Baker and we begin to provide our own services. As you look in 07-08, the cost of to Union Baker ESD was $76,000 to provide services for. We began in 08-09 and reduced that to $40,000, a 36% savings. And then in 09-10 reduced it, in 08-09, 49, and 09-10, 36. In 10-11, we're looking at $27,000 as the cost of those same exact services. And the reason that isn't right now isn't documented as exact is because we're not done with the end of the year, of course, and so we'll tell you exactly in July. But at any rate, you can see that we've reduced the cost of those specific services by 36 18% and 12%, while at the same time increasing our student performance in the first year by 3%, and then on to 1% additional increase in the number of tests that we were passing. Our position is it takes innovation and commitment to implement change. Cost for performance is a measure of effectiveness of that change. Pine Eagle Charter School is fortunate to have recruited folks with multiple credentials and in commitment to improvement. Our charter goal is to increase student performance through innovation and by providing choice. The data will support that. It's been suggested to me from a number of folks that there's no way possible that you could have reached those economies or no way possible you could be serving the needs of your students. We invite all of you to take a moment and go to the ODE webpage, look up school report cards, find out if we're telling you the truth or not. We also invite any of you to go over our bills and look at it. We believe we can and we believe other schools can, but we're not advocating for other schools or other districts. We're saying we want to do this. We need to do this. The money savings between the $80,000 approximately that's provided for our district and the reduction in cost to $49,000 or the next year $27,000 is used in our case to have a full-time technical coordinator for the internet programs and the desktop programs that we have in our district. Without that money, we would use the ESD person. Likely wouldn't be there every day. We have 15 smart boards. This is a small school of 170. We have 15 smart boards and about 75 laptops in our school. Trust me, it takes one better person most of the day, every day, to keep that running. And so that's why we need to stay where we're at. I don't think we'll move in and out of the ESD. My position is probably pretty solid that once we're out, we'll probably stay out there and prefer to stay out now that we are out. So at that point, thank you for the opportunity to speak to you again. I appreciate it. And one thing about beautiful Baker, right now it's pretty white and beautiful Pine Eagle. So we like the grass. It looks pretty beautiful to us. See something green. Thank you.
Well, thank you. And we will try to make sure that there's no skateboard requirement out your direction. thank you all for coming. I know it's a really long way. It's about, 6 hours from here? And that doesn't count the snow. So Right. Really appreciate you coming. Are there any questions from the panel? Senator Tilford.
Well, I might just add that the 12 legislators of the redistricting House and Senate committees were in Baker City over the weekend. Mm-hmm. So we did see your neck of the woods and did drive through the snow. So.
That's right. It's Baker City. I'm a fourth generation Oregonian. It would always be Baker for me.
Yeah, we can appreciate that.
Thank you, Senator Morris. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Next, we will hear from Cindy Hunt, Brian Reeder, and Jim Green.
Cindy Hunt, Oregon Department of Education, and I've brought with me Brian Reeder today. Officially, the Department of Education is neutral on Senate Bill 250, although we think that the topic of ESD reform is something that needs discussion, and frankly, the Senate's been doing that, so we're happy about that. Mainly, I think we're here to answer any questions that you might have about Senate Bill 250 or any of the potential amendments. And so with that.
Okay. Thank you. I'll open it up for questions for you two right now and then ask you to hang out so we can drag you back later. Are there any questions at the moment? Okay. Thank you. Senator Morris, did you have a question?
The -10 amendments, if it would be appropriate to ask questions regarding those amendments, or do you want to wait?
Let's see. We have those, I think, in front of it. That's the governance.
Well, it's beyond the governance. The governance is the A9.
Oh, okay.
And I had not seen the -10.
I think, why don't we hold off, and then I'll bring them back when we go into work session.
Okay.
Is that all right?
Sure.
Great. Thank you. Mr. Green.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jim Green appearing today on behalf of the Salem-Keizer School District. Salem-Keizer is supportive of the idea that's contained in Senate Bill 250 of allowing districts within the Willamette Education Service District to opt out. I've been asked by many folks, well, why would Salem-Keizer want out if they're essentially getting almost all their money now from the ESD? They get approximately 94% of the 90% that is supposed to go to Salem-Keizer for services. That's done through an agreement with the ESD and the Salem-Keizer School Board. The Salem-Keizer School District wants to assure that that can continue on into the future. And with amendments, I believe the Dash 10s will address that issue. I've just looked at them now. I think it addresses that issue that allows Salem-Keizer to take 90% of its allocation that's due to its students in the Willamette ESD and opt out of the Willamette ESD. The Board of Directors of Salem-Keizer is ready to do that. They've wanted out of their ESD for quite some time, and this provides a vehicle for them to do that. I think there are some technical issues that Cindy and I've talked about that need to be addressed that I think are addressed in some of the amendments that are floating around. I haven't seen those. But one of the issues that did concern Salem-Keizer, and I don't think it's anything that we couldn't fix, it's found in Section 32 on page 24 of the bill that requires a school district, if an employee had been with an ESD, they're required to hire them if there's a vacant position essentially doing the same duties. I don't think Salem-Keizer has a problem with that, other than the fact that we're currently in a position of cutting about 400 positions, depending on the budget that comes out of this building, to the Salem-Keizer School District. We just want to be sure that our contract that we have with our employees currently, because of bumping rights within the reduction in force provisions of the contract, our HR director wants to be sure that we don't inadvertently undo something that's in our current collective bargaining agreement by requiring a school district to hire. I think it may be taken care of by the sub 3 there, or by sub 2, that nothing in this section requires a school district to hire a person who's been employed by an ESD if the school district doesn't have a vacant position. We want to make sure that vacant position doesn't mean that the position is open. We filled it with someone who had bumping rights within our school district. We have to allow our collective bargaining agreements direct what bumping rights our employees have. So we want to make sure that vacant position means it's truly an open position, not one that's filled by our staff through the RIF process that we'll be going through.
Okay, thank you. Questions? Thank you. And again, we'll be getting into some more of these details later. Okay, now we have Ozzie Rose and Tricia Yates. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, member of the committee. For the record, I'm Ozzie Rose. I represent the Oregon Association of ESDs. And slightly different voice than the ones you've heard at times. We oppose the bill as written. We support the addition of the amendment put forth by Senator Morse, because one of our problems with this whole discussion is, and it's been around 20 years, we start to solve the, quote, ESD problem by saying, well, if you fix this, or fix this, or fix this, and everybody has their own this, and not very much time is allocated to analyzing what is the impact of each this, or the combination of this. And the proposal, and I believe they're A9s, I'm not certain about that, and I haven't seen any 10s or 11s. I hear there are 10 and 11 also. But the 9s would establish a focused look on the role of regional services, not ESDs. ESDs can come and go. It's regional services that we need to focus on if we're going to do what ESDs are supposed to, and that's create efficiencies in how we operate our K-12 schools. We support allowing the Baker School District and the Salem School District to withdraw from their ESDs at the present time. But we would oppose further implementing of the withdrawal concept until we have a real good look at the total system. One option of that is let the withdrawal start if the withdrawal is approved by a majority of the districts within each SD. And the reason we suggest that is that the way SDs are set up, they are to serve all of the districts within the SD. If a district decides they want to not be served and they want to take, the, quote, their share of the money, that's fine. But we ought to know what the impact is on every district, and they ought to agree to do that. And they can negotiate what are the conditions under which the district would withdraw. Will the district provide some services directly to the other school districts? Will they take less than their 90%? There are a variety of things that could be in that discussion, all designed to let all districts have a say about what happens to the kids within the ESD. By the way, the ESD is formed with a set of boundaries to serve all the kids within that boundary, which is the sum of the school districts. It's not a school district. The issue about whether small schools are hurt or not hurt, everybody asserts a lot of things, but 67 of our districts in this state have less than 500 kids. That's a third of our school districts. Another 31 have less than between 500,000. So half of our school districts have less than 1,000 kids. What if a district pulls out? What if all the 16 largest districts pull out? What's the impact on the others? Nobody has really put much effort into trying to sort that out, other than saying we're sure it would work. We are opposed to the proposal to lower the amount of money for ESDs. If you reduce the amount of money in the formula, 475 to the 237, half of the money, about 55% of the money that is taken away from the ESDs industry would go to 16 school districts, the 16 largest school districts. There's 183 or 4 other school districts that would get the other 45%. Does it flow in a way that allows all of those districts to have the purchasing power that they had under their current system? Nobody has tested that. Nobody has. We all have ideas, but nobody has actually tested it. The governance structure proposal, we agree that the districts ought to be more involved in the governance. We think there's some trouble with the superintendents being on the board or being the board because of open meeting laws and public records. We think the change should be that local board members become the board of the SD and local superintendents become the budget committee. And that's a slight twist on your approach to the governance. The other specific thing is the 90% issue. It's my understanding that the intent of the legislation is that withdrawing districts will take the 90% or the 100% of 90%, however you want to say those words, not all of the money, that not just the total 100% share that might be assigned to their district. I believe the language as written doesn't do that properly, but I think it's going to be fixed. And it needs to be fixed because the ESDs have some fixed responsibilities that have to be paid for and have been paid for out of that 10%. The last item, there's a place in the law where the funds from the energy bill a couple sessions ago, that the public service charge that was to develop activities to increase the energy efficiency of our buildings. This would take, as it's currently written, I believe, would capture this money also to be distributed. And that creates a problem in that the ESDs, by the original statute, have been assigned the responsibility for regulating that activity, seeing to it that the audits are done, seeing to it that what is built after the audit's done does in fact get paid for and does get completed. So, and by the way, that's not being done on ESD by ESD basis. ESDs have formed consortiums where one of them is serving a number of ESD, the districts. And they have to be compensated for providing the staff and work to do that regulation and oversight. And I don't think that the Department of Energy would allow the they might, but I wouldn't think so. Allow districts to oversight, provide their own oversight on whether they're complying with the statute. And with that, I will be glad to ask any questions. I encourage you to do some work on 250 before you move it. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Okay, thank you. Welcome.
Thank you, Chair Burdick and members. I'm Tricia Yates with the Oregon School Boards Association. We represent the 1,400 volunteer, locally elected leaders in the school districts, ESDs, and community colleges of the state. Our members are split on some of the issues around ESD reform. You've heard from some of our members who think that an opt-out proposal is just the right ticket. Others are very concerned about it. That's just within the school districts. And then within the ESD community, there are a different set of concerns that Ozzy has laid out for you. I'm here to speak for information on a portion of the bill that I think is not aimed at improving services, and that's dealing with the governance structure, specifically Section 6 of the bill dealing with elected ESD board members. The elected board members are representative of the citizens of the community. Their job is to be responsive to their constituents, set policy, approve budgets, and hire superintendents. They have a watchdog role with accountability to the taxpayers in their communities through the ballot box. And in that way, they're there for the very same reasons that voters elect you to the legislature. Citizens want to have access to these individuals that they put into office and know that you and their elected board members are responsible for actions at the state, ESD, and local levels. Section 6 of the bill makes superintendents the ESD board. Superintendents are the hired leaders of their districts, and they don't bring the same perspective to the ESD board. And as Ozzy mentioned, if they become the board, they're subject to the open meetings law. That kind of abrogates the collaborative conversations they have with their colleagues from other districts, and that won't be the norm any longer. There's a history of trust and long public service. I think Representative Gelser referenced the Lynn Benton Lincoln ESD earlier. There's tremendous service and leadership provided by ESD board members elected by their constituents. I know that when I think of Lynn Benton Lincoln, I think of Jan Durfler, who served there for 17 years, or Paul O'Driscoll, 5 years. There's a mixture of expertise over time. In High Desert ESD, Scott Pillar is a wonderful board chair with 13 years experience. Scott Reynolds is newer, 3 years. He served on the OSBA board, and these people bring tremendous community leadership and perspective that needs to be considered and valued and retained. The same elsewhere in Northwest Regional ESD. I know Ann Samuelson, a relative newcomer with five years. There's new blood via 4 members with 4 or less years of service, combined with others who've served over 20 years. These are people that are there because they care deeply about their communities, their school districts, and their services. And I urge you to honor your constituents by returning these folks to office. Please respect those decisions and don't strip the elected nature of these positions. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's see. This is a relatively... So are you looking at the Dash 9 amendment?
I'm looking at 250A engrossed, and I believe the Dash 9s, as I saw them, don't affect Section 6 dealing with the governance aspect.
Okay. Senator Hess.
Thank you. The Education Committee looked at this for some time, and... I would just gently push back on you and say the elected ESD board members in the state are not very well known. And if they were accountable, then where were they in Union Baker a number of years ago? Where were they when the WESD scandal broke out? That was tens of millions of dollars in both cases that were either mismanaged or wasted, and no one was found to be accountable. That's why these school districts want out. And so using the superintendents seemed like a pretty pragmatic way to go about some sort of governance of running these ESDs because they're a fairly obscure part of our educational system, one that the public knows very little about. And voters, they don't even know who their legislators are. They have a hard time picking legislators. They have a hard time picking school board members. And ESD member, that's just a whole other layer there, and it's very, very difficult. And that's not to say there aren't some very, very committed people, such as those you mentioned, but I think as a model for accountability in ESDs, that model just isn't working.
Chair, Chair Burdick and Senator Haas, I would respectfully disagree with you. There are 150 or so ESD board members in this state. You've referenced a couple of cases, and everywhere there can be improvement. I think there are ways that we can make improvements in the system. But I could tell you, statewide, 58% of the ESD board members have been elected in the 10 years or less. So the citizens are actively electing these folks, and I believe if you asked your constituents that question, they would tell you that they knew what they were doing at the ballot box by electing these people. So I don't think that's the solution you're looking for, and we'd be happy to work with you on other aspects of system improvement, but these folks are doing a good job and deserve to be retained. Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions from the committee? Thank you very much. Elizabeth Howe and Dana Hepper. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Elizabeth Howe with the Oregon Business Association. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. OBA would like to express our support for ESD reform and Senate Bill 250. ESD reform is necessary to ensure that our education investment is being spent efficiently and effectively. Senate Bill 250 includes provisions that will encourage efficiency and effectiveness. We believe school districts should have the ability to buy high-quality services that they need and should not be forced to buy services they do not need. A school district should have the flexibility to develop a system for service delivery that meets the needs of their unique population and geography. ESD should compete in a market-driven model to encourage high-quality services and a customer service approach to providing them. ESD should be held accountable for providing high-quality services that provide what districts need to best serve student achievement and teacher quality. Every dollar spent on unnecessary administration or ineffective services is a dollar not spent on improving student achievement. It is time for reforming our ESDs to ensure our education investment is being used effectively. We urge your aye vote on Senate Bill 250.
Thank you. Dana.
Chair Burdick, members of the committee, my name is Dana Hepper. I'm the Advocacy Director for Stand for Children, and we're also supporting Senate Bill 250A. There have been many task forces, studies, and reports about ESDs, and none of them have concluded that the current system is highly effective and there's no need for significant change. In fact, quite to the contrary. And while we have, this body has made some tweaks to ESDs over the years, we're still waiting for more meaningful improvements to take hold. And we think we could be providing better services to students if we change the delivery model for those services. So we support keeping this legislation moving forward and alive so that the folks in the Senate and the House can make sure that we pass positive changes to ESDs this legislative session because kids need them now. Thanks.
Thank you. Questions from the panel? Okay. Thank you. Is there anybody else in the audience who would like to speak on this? Okay, I think what we're going to do here today, we have a dash 9 and a dash 10 amendment, and that our staff is working on another couple of amendments to deal with some of the issues that Mr. Rose brought up, dealing with the energy conservation and the calculation of the 90% formula. Those are the ones I know about. Since it was clear from the testimony, there are still people who have not seen the dash 9s and or the dash 10s. We're going to hold off on putting those into the bill, but we are considering those, and we expect to have a couple of other amendments dealing with those other technical issues. So we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 250 and roll this bill over to... Oh, we can post it? Oh, they're posted for Wednesday? Okay, good. Okay, we will be taking it up on Wednesday. All right. That completes our business for the day. Is there any other comments? Okay, we are adjourned. Okay, we are adjourned.